Warning, the following content may contain elements that are not suitable for some audiences. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hello, kiddies. This is y'all's ghoulie, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper. And you're listening to Slasher Radio.
All right, we're back. Slasher Radio. Thank you for coming on back. My name is Mikey Bones. I got the owl with me, Bobby Spitzer.
Yeah, boy.
We don't have a dismay this week, baby. Well, we do, but we don't.
We do, but you know, she already is. Who knows what she's doing? We don't know the things. We can, you know, she could be good in the old fucking salad toss. Who knows?
Whoa, hey.
Who knows?
We don't know.
We don't know. We don't know.
We don't know, but we do. We do have dismay, but we don't. We actually, this is a Shudder sponsored episode. So, you know, here we go. We're going to focus on a movie that I love a lot. I'm not going to tell you yet, even though you read the title, but I'm going to wait. And we got to do a big Shudder sponsored episode. We got Michael Berryman from Hills Have Eyes, Devil's Rejects, the whole nine yards. Hills Have Eyes 1 and 2, the Wes Craven originals. And Dismay and I was able to have the chance to talk to him earlier. So he hopped on, and we're going to break this motherfucker down, me and the owl.
That was a big interview too, man. Michael Berryman.
Big deal, dude. He plays that creepy role perfectly. He knows how to do it.
He does. He does. And as soon as I seen the movie and it was tied into Wes Craven and all that, it was perfect casting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, that's something Wes Craven always does.
It was a good little pick.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, like I said, Shudder-sponsored episode. So, you know, we're going to get into the shout-outs in a minute, but we picked a movie from their library. I mean, come on, how could you? Hills Have Eyes?
It's an OG, man.
They don't have the original on there. They do have Hills Have Eyes 2, which I like. I like the original better, but, I mean, this one's up there, man.
But this is an OG, too, because it came out in the fucking time frame.
Oh, yeah. Way.
Like, they recreated both of them.
Because you have to. You have to. This isn't... It's kind of like It, where, you know, they put out the first half of the movie, and then they had... You can't leave that. They're hand in hand.
I kind of like the second one better.
Yeah?
I kind of like it better, yeah.
I can see it. All right, let's wait, because I'm going to fucking get rolling. I'm going to stop
you. Slow down.
Watch yourself.
You got to be careful.
Okay, so let's just get through the shout-outs real quick. Go to Shudder.com. This is on there. You can go watch Hills Have Eyes 2. There's a lot of good movies on there. We've done countdowns and shit before, and they have newer stuff. And they have Halloweens on there as well, quite a few of them.
But what it boils down to is, what are you going to do?
What you're going to do is...
What are you going to do?
You're going to go to Shudder.com, and you're going to use the Slasher Pod promo code, and you're going to get yourself 30 free days.
Goddamn right.
You can go do that right now.
You can get a whole month for free.
Yep. Like, give it a try, see what you think.
I'm just saying, fucking 30 free days, man. I mean, geez.
Slasher Pod promo code, baby.
Goddamn.
Check it out. Jesus Christ, 12nightsofhorror.com, promotehorror.com, horrormoviesandstuff.com. You can go check them out. We also have, oh fuck, I forgot about the giveaway.
We got
a giveaway this week we got a lot of shout outs to get through. houseofmysteriousSecrets.com, you can go check them out. They got a lot of good shit, man.
Hey, this ain't no fucking joke, this is for real.
Hold on, I gotta share my screen for this one.
Hold on, yeah. This is the real deal.
houseofmysteriousSecrets.com. Mink, look what they got. Oh,
is that a gremlin?
It's a gizmo. It's a gizmo.
That's a fucking gizmo.
Dude, they have a gremlin's gizmo bobblehead. And let me tell you, Mink, is this motherfucker not sweet?
I think that.
Oh my god, it's so nice. He's standing on like a wooden pedestal and It's got his name on it. This thing is legit. And he's making...
It's the nice one, too. It's not the scary one. It's the nice one.
Yes. Yes. Very important. They don't have the size on this.
I'm very disappointed. Say 7.5-8 inches.
Yeah, you think so?
I'm willing to say.
Okay, these are estimated sizes, but I mean, I would agree. I would agree. It's a good size.
For $39.99, you about getting 8 inches, I would say.
For $40, yeah, about a good amount of 8 inches. And you won't even have to pay the $39.99 because you could use the Slasher Radio promo code, get yourself 10% off. They got a lot of cool shit. This gizmo, though, goddamn.
Goddamn, boy.
It hit me out of nowhere. I'm like, all right, what can I talk? Oh, gizmo.
Gizmo. It's the nice one. Not the fucking silly one after the fucking midnight eating. No. The nice one. The one everybody likes.
Yeah, yeah. They do have an It 2017 movie accessory kit.
They got too much shit on here. Like, you gotta sit down and go through the whole fucking inventory with the guy, because they got anything. You don't know what you're gonna fucking find in here, and that's the beauty of it. You can just find anything. And it's perfect. You might find something that somebody that you know likes, and they'll love you forever for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If anybody gets me this gizmo, I will love him forever. But... Also, it's 'tis the season. I mean,
'tis the season. That's what I'm saying.
You know, it's perfect gifts. I mean, come on, man. And when you save money, come on. 10%. What do you want?
Get him a gizmo. Get your nephew a gizmo. That's all I'm saying. Send his ass a gizmo.
Get it.
This may keep fucking around, but send the ass a leprechaun. Oh, wait. Oh, there you got a leprechaun. But that's okay. I get the ass a fuck. I might get another face. I don't know.
Nah, fuck her. She ain't get no goddamn face, Yana.
Fucking shit, Yana.
All right, so you can check out HouseOfMysteriousSecrets.com. You can also go to BigBadToyStore.com.
That's if you're feeling fucking froggy.
That's if you're getting silly, because they got old. I mean, they have a Jackie Chan. I'm looking at Jackie Chan, Venom, and It all on the same screen. And Flash.
And Gogeta from Dragon Ball.
Oh, yeah, there that motherfucker is. Yeah. Transformers and all. So, you know, I mean, these things, I've told you guys, I'm flawed sometimes by some of the shit on here. They have a little It set, too.
When I was a kid, my aunt knew that I was big into Dragon Ball Z. Mm. And she about damn near ruined it for me. One day, when I was throwing a fit because I couldn't watch it, and she was like, "Bobby, dragging his balls Z."
Wow.
I was like, yeah, I am dragging my balls because I'm kind of fucking mad about it.
Dragging his balls Z.
Dragging his balls Z. Just, I mean, but then you think about the name and the title of some of the shit, like Dragon Balls. Like, come on.
I mean, I never got into it.
Dragon Ball. Like, why are you dragging your balls?
For what? What are you going to do?
You dragging your balls for what? You pick them up and get to where you got to go.
Pick them up and walk.
Come on. Stop dragging your
balls. You'd be silly. But no reason.
You silly sideways motherfucker, you.
All right. Hold on. Now we got the last bit so we can fucking dive right. I can't wait to get this movie in play.
Oh, dear.
We had a giveaway out of fucking nowhere.
Some lucky prick.
Some lucky some bitch.
It wasn't me.
And it wasn't me either, and I'm mad about it. Okay, hold on. Draw winners. I'm going to do this shit live.
Come on now. Don't threaten me with a good time.
Take it easy there, boy. Okay, grand prize. We'll do the poster first. Let's do the poster first.
Come on now. Drink a buggy. You keep teasing me.
Okay, here we go. First winner is Melissa. Or Melissa. Oh, I'll just leave it at Melissa. Shit. Oh, shit. First one is Friday the 13th poster.
Shout out, Melissa, for that F-13 poster, you bastard.
You some bitch.
You took it home, which tell us how it feels on Twitter.
That's right. So we'll get in contact with you, Melissa. Check your email. Now for the grand prize. Friday the 13th, 4-piece shot glass set.
Give them the bottle of that.
Oh, they're going to get it. A 4-piece shot glass set before New Year's Eve?
God damn.
Come on.
Come on, that's the kind of deal.
Come on. I mean, what more do you want?
What do you want? Me to come to your house and fuck the cookie pancakes? Come on. What do you want? What do you want?
You don't want that.
What do you want? What else do you want?
All right, baby. Shit. Let's see. Hold on. Is it really not allowing me to...
Just give it to Ollie. When all else fails, just give it to Ollie.
He does deserve it.
He does.
All right, here we go. The winner is... Caitlin told, I don't want to say Eliza, Caitlin. I think she won on our last one.
Caitlin, how the fuck you keep winning?
I think she got a poster.
Are you cheating?
I don't know. I think she might be cheating. Yeah. I don't know. I got to see. It might not even be the same Caitlin. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. So Caitlin won the Friday the 13th four-piece shot glass set. You
who'd
lucky
have thought, man,
butter.
We fucking came up a long way for Caitlin Jenner to win on our
wow.
show. You know what I'm saying? We fucking, come on, man. All those Olympic wins, we made it. We came in big.
Man. That Caitlin Jenner. Well, all right, Caitlin and Melissa, congratulations.
Yeah, seriously, you guys fucking, there you go.
You got yourself a couple dang things. And later in the month, we will have another giveaway. So, you know, look out for that. Keep up on Twitter. This kind of happened after we recorded the last episode. And, you know, so keep up on Twitter. You're going to miss out on a lot of things like this right here.
Don't say we ain't did nothing for you.
No, you can't say that. Okay, it's me. Hills Have Eyes 2.
I was actually intrigued by this one.
Okay.
I was mad when my cat kept fucking with the Christmas tree.
Oh, man.
Because
I
got into this one.
Okay.
It had all the aesthetics. It really did.
Oh, yeah.
For a Wes Craven movie. Like, it had all the aesthetics. And then, you know, plus with Michael in it, it was to me, I was sitting there, I didn't really expect too much of it. I don't know, because of the original and the time frame, like, I never really got into it before. And then I started watching the fucking thing. I was like, this is pretty damn good, man.
84 was, you know, those mid-80s were an awkward time for a couple different things. A lot of things were changing.
And especially when you have, like, Freddy and shit out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that time, like, you have to really come with something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, Hills Have Eyes 2, 1984. Love this franchise. I'm not going to mention the remakes yet. It's just so different than anything else. And, of course, Wes Craven. This is kind of... I'm surprised we got Nightmare on Elm Street out of somebody who made this movie. You know what I mean?
I know, dude.
It's such a different type of slasher. It's like... It's got every element of creepy in it, where even they had, you know, snakes and spiders and all this stuff going around, where every kind of corner of it really freaked you out a little bit.
Yeah, they threw in, like, you know, raccoons for jump scares, but it built up a lot of the suspense. And you gotta understand too, like, watching this movie, there was a lot behind it because you were anticipating so much from the first.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand where it's coming from. Like, you can't, this isn't, if you're going to watch The Hills Have Eyes, the original, watch the first and the second. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes. Yeah.
If you've never seen them before. So watch number one, then watch number two.
I almost think you have to. And I mean, I've seen both of them and I haven't in a while. So I was like, let me give it a refresher. I put on the first one and then the second one. I feel that you have to almost do that because... I don't know, as much as they're kind of the same, they're very different in strange kind of ways.
They are, and I think a lot of it has to do with, like, you know, from 77 to 84. It's not that far of a, you know, time span, but you're going from one decade into the other, and at that time period, that was a big jump. You know, and like I said, you know, you're sitting here and you're watching it, and you have a lot to hold a candle to it, because at this time now, Wes Craven was well-established.
Hills Have Eyes was a hitter. Even the first one, yeah.
And was this before Freddy or after Freddy?
This was before Freddy.
Before Freddy. So yeah. You're sitting here and you're watching it. You really don't know. Like, you can't, like, alleviate it. Like, if it would have been after Freddy, it would have alleviated a lot of the...
Oh, this was at the same time.
Was it the same time?
They both came out in 84.
But which one came out first?
Ah, the chicken or the egg, my friend. This one was Nightmare on Elm Street, November 16th. Let me see. I'll be lucky if I have a September. So it did beat it by a couple. Oh, no. DVD release. Hold on.
Because I seen it knowing that Freddy was out first. I didn't see the part two until, you know, now. Like, this is the first time for me seeing the original part two.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing it with the eyes, knowing that he had Freddy and everything already established, you know, like, you're expecting something. Mm-hmm. So if you're going in there and you don't know what to expect and you haven't seen Freddy, like, let's just say you go back in that time frame, it really sets the tone. because it has all that Wes Craven-ish kind of, you know, it's like the little shit too, because like there'll be like little scenes where they're just sitting there fucking around, but there's a tarantula coming across the scene, you know, like little stuff like that. It sets the tone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's interesting. This was in June of 84, by the way. So it's crazy. I didn't think about it because whenever we do movies and when they're older like this, we always try and put ourselves in the person from when this movie came out and try and capture that impact. We don't think so much as to, this came out before Nightmare on Elm Street, but people like us who were born in, I mean, me 89, you 90, like right on the cusp of the 90s. We didn't, you know, by the time we get to the age to really start consuming all this stuff, we know Nightmare on Elm Street first.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, even if you were to watch this, you know, if this came out before Nightmare on Elm Street, or whatever the case was, it sets the tone. Because even if it didn't or if it did not, it had this, it came out around the same time. It sort of setting the tone for what Wes Craven was about. It showed you a lot of how, you know, the characters can talk up and build such a suspense. Because the whole time I'm sitting here and I'm watching and I'm waiting, like, they had a lot of flashbacks to the original. They showed a lot of that. But at the same time, they were revealing a lot of the ties. You know, like, they didn't really show one of the characters an actual reality of the situation for part two until, like, maybe more than a quarter of the way through. You know, same, and they did the same shit with Freddy in the first Nightmare on Elm Street, where they just talked about him. They didn't introduce him for a while. You know, and that's how creative he is. Like, he can just use some of the gossip, I guess, to build up such a suspense. So when those characters are introduced, it was like, holy shit. So when Michael came in and made his fucking, you know, he came back as the brother, it was like, oh shit, okay, this is going down.
He makes you want it.
Yeah, he made you want it. And then it finally happened. You're like, oh, fuck. All right, cool. Because the whole time you were waiting there, you're waiting for it. Like, the dog was barking, Beast was barking, and they're telling you the whole thing. And, you know, the history behind it. She's saying it's a raccoon. She really knew the dog. And then finally, boom, he shows up. And that's what you were waiting for.
Yeah, yeah. And the kind of counteract, because I like that, you know, I didn't think of the whole Freddy aspect of it because, you know, us, we had no choice but to know Freddy first. But now thinking a counter of that, think about it from being back then in 84 and seeing these movies. This is when Wes Craven cemented himself, I think.
Yeah, he really
this
set
the
tone.
This was the point in time. Because you got to think, dude, June and then November, Hills Have Eyes 2, Hills Have Eyes 1 in 77. And now that was his first big deal movie. And, you know, it was like, okay, what is he going to do now? And then, boom, Hills Have Eyes 2, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, he set the tone big time. I think Freddy was, you know, obviously his biggest hit.
Oh, yeah.
This one set the tone for everything that was to come. Like, you see a lot of how he was going to handle Scream, you know, with the people getting picked off and shit like that. Like, it was really interesting, and I didn't, you know, when I sat there and I saw the Wes Craven credits and all that, it really made me want to sit down and watch it, man, and I'm glad because I got hung up on it. Like, I enjoyed watching this part two of it. Just everything from it, like, it was definitely, you know, an 80s movie, and I liked that a lot about it, with the aesthetics of it, how it was set up with the super fuel and shit like that. But Wes Craven, set the tone right here. I think part two was a big masterpiece in him looking back.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. This was, I still can't think of a director that hit you like this.
No.
And keep in mind, I forgot, this is all after Last House on the Left.
He was coming out with a lot of shit, too, because he had, like, some swamp movie or something like that.
Yeah, the Swamp Thing. That was another underground movie, man. Yeah. Yeah. And you got to think, man, Last House on the Left, 72. Then he had another movie. Then Hills Have Eyes, 77.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, that's not a big span. And then he had something else in between. 82 had the Swamp Thing. Then Hills Have Eyes 2 in 84.
Yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street in 84, 85 Nightmare on Elm Street 2, two years later, Dream Warriors. I mean,
and that's what I was saying on Nightmare on Elm Street. That was the one that kind of like resurged a slasher film. You know what I mean? Of course, that's going to be his biggest one, but this part two kind of set the tone for how Wes Craven was going to go move forward from on there.
This was the point.
Yeah, it really was, and had a lot of like very clever attacks and a lot of, you know, just the way that the antagonists were moving in the movie and how they were set up. It was exciting to sit down and watch it, because I love trend movies, and this one, you can honestly remake it and it wouldn't necessarily fit. Like, you could fit it into any era.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the 84 time stamp on it, just the way it was shot, like, it had certain kind of aesthetics as far as the way it was filmed that just was fun to sit down and watch, man. I mean, you can definitely draw a lot of that Wes Craven-esque ideology from it. And like I said, with the little small shit, too, like the little insects, the raccoons, and all the kind of, like, distraction thing, because even in Scream, like, you're sitting here and you're waiting for shit to happen, you're waiting, you know it's gonna be something weird, and he'll introduce a phone call, but it's not Ghostface. Mm-hmm. You know, you're waiting for these guys to attack from the hills, but it's not them, it's a fucking raccoon. He set the tone for how he was gonna approach a lot of these fucking future movies right here in part two. Big Wes Craven movie, big Michael Barrymore movie, too.
Oh, yeah. Let's take a second, though. Hold on, because I'm looking at Wes Craven's IMDb right now. Dude, nobody's made it. I mean, this dude was the man. Like I said, Hills Have Eyes in the 70s. Last House on the Left before that. Hills Have Eyes in 84. Nightmare on Elm Street 84. All the Friday the 13th movies. And then in 96, Scream.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, damn. And he had, God, Freddy vs. Jason in between that. Freddy's New Nightmare. He stayed fresh better than anybody. He hit you with something new. And I do think that, obviously, Freddy vs. Jason was something new, but New Nightmare was also something very new. He hit it us was. With. We seen Freddy in a whole new light after how many movies we seen him differently still.
It's crazy, too, because, like, he was definitely a trendsetter. Like, Michael Berryman, to cast him into that movie, was a big trendsetter at the time. Like, just think at that point, like, a lot of people, like, horror movies were, they weren't at their strong point.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to put him in that role and to utilize him the way that he did, and then plus he had Weird Science in the year after that, and he really set the trend for how, like, a lot of movies were gonna go as far as, like, casting and you know, his own direction too with his movies, because, you know, New Nightmare, everything that led up after this was set by this movie. I really honestly, like, I kept thinking about Scream a lot, and how he had the characters had their own personality, their own relationships. They were getting picked off. They didn't want to believe a lot of the shit that was going on. You know, I didn't really draw a lot of Freddy from it other than the aesthetics of it, because it was in that time frame. You know, like, who'd have thought that this guy was going to come out with Freddy Krueger the year after that?
Right.
Or the same year, rather.
Same year, yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. Thought? What a catalog, dude. I mean, talk about reinventing yourself. I'm sorry. Wes Craven's got a bigger hammer than Stephen King.
I mean, with Robert Englund. Who was Robert Englund at that time?
Not nobody.
That's what I'm saying. Like, his casting is just off the charts. Like, he just knew, this is the guy I want for this role. He's perfect for it.
And not only that, Michael Berryman touched on this in the interview you guys are going to hear. I don't think we forgot about that. He made you, he made you get invested with the characters. So, you know, invested is an understatement for Freddy, but, you know, regardless of what you were watching, the characters, and it could be also, like you said, him just picking the right ones, but also him knowing how to bring that out in the story complements it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dude, I have not seen Wes Craven involved with something I haven't liked.
Not many, man. Like, I don't know. Wes Craven's always been one of my top favorites, and especially like Scream's probably one of my favorite horror movies. More so than Freddy, man. He never ceases to amaze me. Like, even looking back at certain shit that I never watched, like, I just, maybe I like this movie, maybe I won't, and I always end up fucking too.
Yep.
Wes Craven, man. Always.
Corner Pocket said to me once, he's like, and Dismay too, because we did, obviously, with our catalog of Scream recently. It's like, what? They were like, what's your thing with Scream? I'm like, I don't know, man. It's just I love watching about it.
Man, it was so, like, you got to think, like, he's come out in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s. Yeah. And no matter what the fucking scene was, he always was there with that trend. He was always in it. Even with Scream 4, like, you can't, like, the shit that was going on in Scream 4, that time frame compared to the original, he worked it in. And it was weird because, you know what? The original Scream was so tied into the 90s. It was such a 90s film.
90s technology, too. Think about it with the phones and all that stuff.
Fucking stab and all that. He made it work. It didn't fucking matter. That's what I'm saying. Like, you can go back and watch this movie with an open mind and fit it into now. Mm-hmm. Even though this came out in 84.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, that's what I mean. I just... The guy knows what's going on, and he knows how to translate it. I mean, just, God, we lost such a genius.
He set the tone, man. He set the tone. He really did. He just knew casting and knew what character was going to... If he'd have picked anybody else but Michael Berryman, it wouldn't have fucking worked.
No.
That's how important it came down to. Like, as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, yeah, I know this guy. That's the Hills Have... You know, that's what the fucking movie ties into. And then right after that, fucking boom, Weird Science. Like, you watch that movie, you see him, it's... You know, that's the guy from the fucking Hills Have Eyes movie. That's Wes Craven. That's his shit. Like, he was such a trendsetter, and he set the tone for so many things to come.
Another thing that he utilized well was he was the type of guy that no matter the budget, made something golden. And, you know, I like the, you know, the fake rock props. You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
that's the only thing. Like, if you're looking for something to gripe, there were some cutscenes that were, like, off.
Yeah.
That didn't fit. You could tell they used just to throw in there, especially with that snake scene. But anyway, the whole movie picks up, I guess, pretty much after the original.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the guy Bobby and all that shit, and they're explaining what's going on in the desert. And, yeah, I like how they utilize the whole, you know, daylight saving time. You know, mm-hmm. You should have remembered to set your clock. And they were behind the schedule to meet that race.
Mm-hmm. Dude, there was always a reason.
There's always a reason. So, of course, they had to fucking save time and cut through the middle of the desert. And that's how they got caught up, you know, fucking with everybody else. And there was some good on-set, I guess, graphics at the time. Like, mm-hmm. you know, they used a lot of the fire in a good way. They used a lot of the fight scenes and the fucking traps and shit that they set in this movie. It was really cool. It was real clever. Real clever.
And that's what I was saying, man. He utilized, because this only had $1 million budget. And just being out in the middle of fucking nowhere consumes a lot of money like out of a budget. And not, they blew shit up in this movie. Like, you know, they spent money. And, you know, I'm not mad at the rock props and all that stuff because he did what he had to do.
He did. And then plus, too, you got to think, like, back then, you weren't really paying attention to that. Like, we can point it out now. Back in 1984, you weren't really paying attention. That's the technology, I guess, you were used to. Like, we can look back at it and point it out now, just like we would with any Godzilla movie. But back then, it was what it was. And even, you know, for him to get it to be what it was back then was a miracle out of his ass that he pulled with $1 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a lot of tough critics back then in the 80s, man. You're talking about a time that's approaching the new millennium.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are trying new shit too. You know, another thing. So that's why I'm not mad at it. I'm, you know, fucking for what he pulled off with that amount of money. Also, a Wes Craven classic. They had a lot of story action throughout the whole thing. So it's almost like you never get bored. They're always filling you with story. There's really nothing not needed in these movies.
No, the only thing that I could say about it is, like, they did revert to the first one a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they did, but, I mean, that just, like I said, like, you don't, if you've never seen the second one, you do want to go back and watch the first one just so they know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes it easier to watch, but you don't have to because they do go back and touch back on it, so that, to me, kind of feels like they wasted time.
Yeah, yeah. I could see
you know,
it.
For the second one, you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, that's just me nitpicking.
Yeah, yeah. I could see that. Up a lot, too. The original had a $230,000 budget. They tripled it, man. Quadrupled it, rather.
Yeah, The Hills Have Eyes, part two. I really enjoyed this one. Like I told you, like, my cat was fucking around with shit. I really didn't give a fuck. I was too involved in the movie. I was watching the fucking thing. The fucking Rebel and all that, man. I was like, this is a pretty badass movie, man. Like, shit.
Yeah. But all right, we do have an interview with Michael Berryman, as we mentioned. Me and Dismay, you hear fucking Dismay on this one. So you don't miss her entirely, unfortunately. So, you know, we're going to throw you to that right now. We're going to be back after that. We're going to talk about the remakes. I think we got to talk about the remakes a little bit.
The old remakes, baby!
All right, so enjoy that, guys. We'll be right back. All right, so, you know, with the Shudder, I don't know, special, I guess you could call it, we have a very special guest with us, Michael Berryman, a whole list of movies that he's starred in, you know, Hills Have Eyes, Hills Have Eyes 2, The Originals, The Devil's Rejects, the list will go on and on. How are you doing today, sir?
Really good, Mike, in April. It's good to be on board with you on a nice chilly day.
Yeah, it's definitely chilly. But, yeah, we're... Like I was saying before we started recording, I've always been a huge Hills Have Eyes fan, and, you know, it's such a, it's so different than anything else. And what was it like when you first heard of this role? What did you expect going in? What did you think of it?
Well, I just finished working for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and came back after 4 months, came back to Santa Monica and had an agent. I was just getting started in the business pretty much, and I got a phone call one day to go to an office and have a meeting with some names that didn't mean anything to me because I hadn't met them. It was Barry Kahn, Peter Locke, and Wes Craven. So I went, and we sat down and did our introductions, and Wes started to explain the McBean family legend and this little movie that we were going to make. And they're just young and... enthusiastic, and, you know, Peter has he just turned 75. I was in L.A. a couple weeks ago for his birthday party. He's still youthful and silly as ever. So Wes struck me as somebody who was very easygoing, very calm, but a really, really smart guy. I mean, just well-educated, very cerebral. I mean, he knew what he was going to convey before words came out of his face, so to speak. So it was a real friendly meeting, and then I asked him, I said, well, okay, I get the idea. You have two families, and I'm part of the cannibal family. Okay, I get that. And I asked him, I said, well, where are you going to film it? And they said, well, we're going to be in the high desert, which was fine with me because I was real familiar with that area. I used to live in the mountains of Big Bear, and then if you go down north, down into the high desert, and you know, east or west, it's just Mojave Desert forever. So I said, yeah, this could be some fun. So we signed contracts, and off we went.
And it's known that the setting of these two films were, you know, with it being in the desert, were like physically hard on you due to the heat and all of that. Were you concerned going into the second film after dealing with the first and the extreme conditions?
Well, yeah, I have a condition. I can't dissipate heat very well. So the first one, it went fairly well. I knew my protocol, and we didn't have a lot of equipment. We had a motorhome, the station wagon and trailer, which we wound up blowing up. and then a van. So it was kind of guerrilla filmmaking. It was, limited budget, but the grittiness and the honesty that we put into everybody's role, I think is what really sold it. Because there's no, there's a lot of meat on the bone. There's no extemporaneous footage that's kind of silly and you don't need it. It's tight. The original is very tight. At night, it was very cool. Daytime, I was just very aware of how to, do my shot, get back in the shade, or if there's some air conditioning in the van, and take care of myself. So I didn't have any health issues. I just had health concerns, and it's my responsibility as a professional to make those aware. So you always have a first aid person or a medic available. The shoot went well, lasted a couple weeks. Then when I got, I had some other credits, worked for Al, and Al from Honey and Shrunk the Kids and a bunch of stuff. And then I found out we were going to do part two. Well, that was in a southern desert area, near Desert Hot Springs in Southern California, not too far from Joshua Tree National Monument, which is very beautiful, especially in the winter. So, and the time we were there was, it wasn't blazing hot. It was a pretty easy working conditions. The cast and the setup was a lot different than the original.
You mentioned that you guys blew up the RV and all that stuff, and we've seen that kind of more towards the earlier part of the film. Was that, you know, the actual RV you guys used offset and everything that you blew up?
Well, actually, what we blew up was the trailer that was being towed behind the station wagon. And, yeah, we actually blew it up. Now, in part two, there was the red bus, school bus. That that got blown to shit. That was actually the fellow who did the explosions was Greg Auer. And Greg Auer is pretty, very well known for, he did all of the miniature small explosions in Star Wars. And he had just finished doing that. And I remember when they were done with all of the traveling shots of the kids, you know, trying to beat the time because they forgot about daylight savings time, they're trying to get to the race. Once they had everything finished where we didn't need to shoot the bus anymore, he spent about a week and a half preparing the bus because we could only blow it up once, and it had to be done sequentially so you could see it on the, so it doesn't just go pop, you know. Well, he had to drill out almost all of the rivets. He had to structurally re-engineer it. So when he had something called a mortar that would blow upward in a canister, it would push these wooden posts that would lift the roof high enough to where the flames would come out around the edge that was separated from the sides of the bus. And then we wanted to see smoke. And then we wanted to see explosions go laterally. So had a lot of time to sit down and chat with him, you know, during lunch or dinner break. And he was explaining, because I was in on a lot of the production meetings, and he was explaining how his progress was coming along and, you know, what he needed to make it go well. And it went off without a hitch, and it was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. And wow, hear how much went into that. That's so crazy. That seems like a whole other project in itself.
Oh, yeah. It took over a week to rig it.
Holy crap. Wow. You mentioned that, you know, you met Wes Craven. You never met him before. He was kind of earlier on in his career. What was it like working with him so early on and then seeing kind of what he turned into, you know, one of the faces of horror, I guess you could call it?
It was very nice. It was sweet. I went to his wedding. I was at his funeral services. I think about a couple years ago in Los Angeles at the Directors Guild. His son actually told some stories and eulogized his dad. It was very nice to see success with someone of his caliber. As a human being, he was just a really great guy. And smart, knew how to put a story together. He had a little bit of a it's not sinister or dark. He had a little bit of understanding of human nature and how most horror films. I have two categories. There's horror films that are usually suspenseful. They always have a moral center, meaning you get to a point of the threat, and then you have to choose, you know, are you on the side of the monster or the potential survivors? So it always has some humanity in it. Now, there's also a category of films that are pretty much just slasher, bloodlust films, which I don't say that people should not make this or that. The only area that I would, you know, crush people over would be, of course, if you're harming animals or children. But overall, if you Wes would go emotional horror, like Serpent in the Rainbow was, you know, kind of a nice combination. It was a little different. But nothing gratuitous. Even in the Nightmare series, it gets pretty sinister. But, you know, Robert Englund's character, always has that potential sense of humor and self introspection, you know. So I would say that Wes's efforts and the industry were honest, classy, and we did a movie of the week with Robert Urich and she was the darn all the soap, Susan Lucci. It was called Invitation to Hell. And I know, I remember talking to Wes when we did that. He was really hoping that he could become more mainstream, you know, and maybe get a TV series or something, because he was as sharp as Rod Serling, in my opinion, the way he could write and weave a story together. But it didn't quite happen. I do know that, you know, Last House on the Left, of course, was very controversial. It was kind of obviously hard to watch. I believe he did it. Did he not have a series for a little while on cable? I'm trying to remember.
Not that I know of. I know he actually had Scream recently. I don't know if you can count that, but nothing that I know of otherwise.
Yeah, I know that he was kind of, in a sense, hoping that he could be accepted more like an Alfred Hitchcock slash Rod Serling type of a director, because he did have the propensity for that. But, you know, Wes was just one of the nicest, easiest people to work with. I remember when we were doing the original Hills Have Eyes, and Pluto has the binoculars and the walkie-talkie, and I'm, you know, say, easy pickings now, you know, they're stuck, you know, and Wes says, okay, on this shot, I want you to take your knife and in a very sinister manner, swipe across this granite boulder a few times, you know, like, you know, you're getting ready to go cause some chaos. And I told Wes, I go, no, because Pluto's knife would be deadly sharp at all times. To swipe it on a rock would actually dull it. It was almost an insult to Pluto. But that was the only, I think that's the only go-around we ever had. The only other time we had not a disagreement, but an epiphany was when we were doing Deadly Blessings in Texas. And I had a girlfriend from San Antonio, and I brought her up to visit the set for a while. And she was quite a lovely girl, and wasn't too enamored with the egos. We had four starlets that were kind of, you know, careers were just getting going. And she was witness to that kind of, you know, chit-chat and wow, and she didn't like it. So I remember one weekend, had a couple of days off, went back to San Antonio and get ready to fly back to finish my contract, and she had told me that she wasn't coming back to the set because unless she saw different behavior. I said, well, you can't really ask that, you know. So I remember had a little bit of a conversation, and she was going to break up with me if that didn't happen. So I remember calling Wes an hour before the last flight back on a Sunday night, so I could be there on the set on Monday morning, asking him if he could please take control over his starlets. And I remember, I'll never forget, it was like about 9 o'clock at night, and he goes, quote, Michael, I have no control over these. I mean, I'm just glad they're not, you know, scratching each other's eyes out. You know, and I said, okay, brother. You know, thanks, Wes. I'll see you on set. And if I'm sad, you'll know why. And I went to work, and I was sad. But that was the only two times that I can remember when Wes and I Well, we were on the same page, but we had to go with different results.
And you've had worked with a lot of people, and most recently the Death House movie was released last year, and you were joined by Tony Todd and Barbara Crampton and Bill Moseley. And what was it like on set, the atmosphere with all of you coming together for this, you know, brutal film?
Oh, it's quite brutal. Well, we were filming at night, and it was a pretty barren facility, if I recall, And it was fun to work with all my friends, you know, Tony and Bill, Pinhead, Doug, and I remember walking down the hallway, getting ready to do the main confrontation, where we explained to Kane Hodder that, he's been played. And as we're walking down the hallway, Kane, he kind of clenches his fist and shrugs his shoulder like a little kid. He goes, "God, Michael, this is so cool. And we're all working together. And I'm getting some really good footage time, playing." I said, "Yeah, you're playing the lead guy here. This is great, man. I'm happy for you." He's like a little kid in a candy store. And then we do the scene, where he's presenting to us, the five evils that, "Yeah, I did everything you want, man. I'm waiting for my reward," and then we let him know that he's been duped, and the look on his face was crushingly lovely. It's like a little kid, "What do you mean I don't get the candy?" Almost made me cry. Almost.
And getting back to The Hills Have Eyes, I don't know how to explain it. I don't usually like remakes or most newer horror films so much, but the remakes of The Hills Have Eyes series, not that I would put them ahead of the originals, because what you guys did with the props and all the work that went into that is just above and beyond. But the remakes for The Hills Have Eyes, I'm not mad at, and I think they were pretty good movies. I was just wondering what you thought about them.
They were pretty good movies. I mean, there's a lot of aspects to consider when you're talking about a film. One of my biggest, first of all, you have to have a good story and hopefully good acting. I'm a big fan of live dialogue where it's not done in an ADR lab later after the fact, because I like to have the emotional content of the other actors, the atmosphere, and you're wearing your wardrobe. There's so much that adds to the texture of the words that come out of your face, So my biggest complaint, and this is not in reference to Aja's films, but I really like to have clear, enunciated, live dialogue so you can understand what they're saying and you get the gist of what the message is. I mean, if they're writing words down, they must be important. I would like to hear them. So I would say, as a production observation, I thought he did quite fine. I mean, the camera work is steady, the lighting is balanced when you need it to be, the dialogue is crisp. The effects were not, so much over the top. I only seen the first one, and I liked the beginning, the atmosphere of the atomic test ground village and all of that. I thought it was, it really laid it down for you, and I really felt like I was in that atmosphere. But honestly, about the time that, they were coming out of the cave with the National Guard troops, and there was that one metal spiky thing that kind of, it looked obviously CGI, and it just seemed a little over the top as far as a weapon. And at that point, it turned into chase kill, and I started to lose interest in the individual characters as people. And that's one of the things that Wes did quite well, is both families had strong characters, and by that I mean they were well defined. A lot of the characters in the remake didn't grab my attention. I didn't get involved in their moment-to-moment experiences, which are being, put on the screen for me to get in. If you lose involvement, then when something happens to someone, You don't really care so much. It's just like I played good guys, yeah, bad guys, devils, angels, comedy. But if you're going to be a protagonist or an antagonist, then you want it to be within the framework of believability. You know, unless you're like Freddy Krueger, or you can just surprise the audience with, well, and I can also do this. Oh, wow, okay, mm-hmm, you're a wizard, you know, or a demon, whatever. But in general, I've had people ask me in interviews and whatnot and say, well, how do you feel playing a bad guy? I said, well, there's certain roles I will not play, you know, like pedophile, for instance, you know, harming kids. No, that ain't happening, you know, no. Gratuitously killing animals. No, I'm not doing that. Now, you need a strong negative character to raise the bar, I believe, for your hero to have a dark night of the soul before the challenge, even if it's sprung up on them. There's always a build-up to where you understand their strong points and their vulnerabilities, and it's always the vulnerability that gets presented to the potential hero. So they really have a bar to meet and to go forward into the quote unknown, and that creates a wonderful moment where they get to have some self discovery, and I find that always to be a great way to go in storytelling, and a really good movie that's scary is one that, even me, for someone who's in the industry, is to where I feel like I might have to leave all light on before I go to bed. And the last film that really did that to me was, before I was an actor, and that was The Exorcist. I run into Linda a lot. We just did a show in Sacramento. She's a very dear friend, and she does wonderful work for the dogs, pit bulls and stuff. But so yeah, I like to be scared. Not a roller coaster guy anymore, but you know. And also, if you you know, I grew up born in 1948, and my birth effects are based upon the fact my father went to Hiroshima. So the atom bombs and the nuclear arms and all that stuff didn't make us any safer, you know. So each generation has their own what's a scary monster. So I think with young, upcoming filmmakers and storytellers, there's always a fresh challenge. But if you keep it to where you're dealing with humans and their challenges, their strengths, their weaknesses, and rising to the occasion, you're going to have a good story. I'm not a big fan of, robots necessarily, or Transformers, or, you have to have some substance to your characters.
Speaking of newer films, I've seen that you're currently filming for Room 9 in New Jersey. Is that correct?
I did my part on that. I was working on a project, and they actually I was actually doing a convention, and then we pulled about 4 hours of time to work on Room 9, and then there was another one I worked on for a couple hours on the second day while I was also doing a convention called Mr. Blue Shirt. So if they're still in production in New Jersey, I hope they can wrap. The young filmmakers are very nice and had a lot of creativity and a lot of really good ideas. So I hope for them a lot of success because we need new filmmakers and storytellers, so we can go have some popcorn and forget about what we saw in the news and, you know, be distracted and be stronger and entertained. That's what we do.
Are you able to give us any information on your character in that movie or the film itself?
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
We tried.
I didn't see the whole script. So my director, writer, producer said, here's what we got going. Here's the basis for your character. Here's what's going on in this scene. And here's what we need. And so I kind of just trusted what they told me and created an environment and a backstory in my mind for the character, and then you kind of add that to the little sketch that they give you, and you make it your own, and then with some commentary or observation by your director, they'll say, "Ooh, I like what you're doing there, and can you add a little bit of this and do a little bit of that at this point in time, and then down over here, have your own interpretation of this intersection of this other character and action." So that's kind of how that was presented to me, and given the fact that I had just been given the scenes like an hour before we started rolling film, I just put a lot of trust in my director and listened carefully to what he needed, you know, for the camera to capture, you know. But I did make sure that that my microphone was dialed in, and my sound guy was very happy, because that's a big deal for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something to look forward to.
I have a question for you guys. There's a film that was made 10 years ago, the only film by Andrew Getty. It stars myself, Sean Patrick Flannery, Dina Myers, and Fred Kohler. It's called The Evil Within.
I have not... Oh, that one came out last year?
Yeah. There's a picture of me sitting in front of a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Called The Evil Within. It's based on a novel. It's really, really cool.
I have not checked... You know, I was actually saying the other day how, you know, doing this, and we never get a chance to watch movies we actually want to see. We kind of just watch the stuff for this. But, I mean... next time, if you ever have time, we'd love to have you on, because I do have that. I know you have there's like a somebody behind you. I know exactly the movie you're talking about, and it's like I said, I got to check this one out. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, there's a mirror, which is a portal to nightmares, and I am the storyteller. I bring the nightmares into Dennis's dreams. It's very interesting film. I think you'll enjoy it. And if you get a chance to see it and want to do another interview, just get in touch.
1,000,000%. Yeah, and this finally, like I said, it's finally something I have on my list that I've been wanting to see. And I, you know, definitely the story caught me. It was kind of...
It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it is unique, and it's beautifully filmed. I recommend it. He put his entire $10 million of his fortune before he passed away into it. And he even sold his 427 AC racing car to buy some editing.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, he was a motorhead and a graduate of USC School of Film. A very good friend with he had his issues, but overall, this is his life's work. It's a pretty trippy film. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh yeah, we're definitely gonna we'll get that started. Hopefully, start trying to set something up next week or as soon as possible, because I want to see this one.
Well, get a hold after you check it out, and then we'll pick a time for you.
That's great, but I know you don't have a lot of time today, and we really appreciate you coming on and taking your time, and it looks like we'll be talking to you again soon, hopefully.
Alrighty then. You folks have a lovely holiday, and be safe out there, and we'll talk to you soon.
You too, Mr. Berryman.
It was great talking to you, Michael. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Right. Bye-bye.
Alrighty. We're back. While you guys were listening to that, we were recording our Easter egg.
We were. What do you want to do? What do you want to do?
You guys, if you're not listening to the Easter eggs, Jesus. Please.
I don't know. Please.
Do yourself
There's a whole
favor.
Fucking other...
Whole world.
Radio show, pretty much, at the end of these things.
Oh, yeah.
I think Slasher Radio is at the end of these.
Yeah. This is the professional side, and then the Bajol comes out after the music.
If you want the real deal, you gotta listen to the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, you're missing the experience.
Come on now.
Come on, what are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
You want to listen to a fucking half thing, or you want to do the whole thing? Come on. It's up to you. But for real, man, the remakes.
Yes, we mentioned we're going to talk about the remakes. I'm not mad at them. Not mad at them.
They were so different.
They were different, but it was different in a way you feel this would progress.
It definitely was. Mm-hmm. Like we were saying with the trends and keeping up with the times, it definitely did.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, there's, you know, everybody knows I'm usually an originals guy, and I do give the originals up on the remakes only because of the shit they had to go through to make those movies. And for them to be as good as they were, taps off.
I mean, they put a lot of effects, a lot of fucking gore. They upped the gore.
CGI and the whole nine yards, at least.
The originals weren't that gory.
No, but, yeah, they could have been. They definitely could have been, but, yeah, I guess they just, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point.
I think they just got away with, like, because back then the story was so new and fresh that by the time it got to where it was for the remakes, that the story, you know, they had to go that route just so they can strike fear upon what the story was already set as, you know what I mean?
And it's the mid-2000s.
Right.
I mean, you can't not get a movie like this.
They're going to pull out their fucking Brajol with all the technology they got for that time. I mean, That's when everything was coming to peak. And a lot of people, too, forget, like, we ain't far off from the early 2000s.
No, we're not.
We're not. Like, a lot of people be like, oh, you know, early 2000s, how did you do it? Well, we had fucking half the shit. All they did was just make it better. Like, the iPhone and shit. We had that.
Yeah. I mean, technology has improved, and obviously there's been additions to it, but for the most part, technology has improved when it comes to movie making because, you know, like you said, I mean, all these things were easily obtainable that were in these remakes. Easily obtainable. Movies were overdoing this stuff. So, you know, it's not a stretch for them to pull off anything amazing. That's why the originals, just on effort alone, I have to give it to them.
My favorite fucking one of the, you know, into the new millennium movie with Godzilla.
Yeah. Godzilla was the shit, man.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
That shit really walked it in. But I mean, they utilized that same. They knew what they had, and they did it. Like they, for me, like if people want to come over and sit down and watch The Hills Have Eyes, I'm not gonna put in the originals.
Yeah. That's more of like. I don't know how to explain it.
You know, like connoisseur, like aficionados. And, you know, if I got some motherfucker that's, like, into collecting old NES games. And, yeah, I'm a fucking original.
If Tim came over.
Because if I put in the new ones for Tim, he'd be like, you don't got the original.
What are you?
What are you, piece of shit? What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Really, scumbag?
You're going to fucking invite me over and put the remake?
I got the originals in my trunk.
Well, if that's the fucking case, then, I mean, we can watch, you know, fucking Karate Kid or something. Like,
it's 6 hours.
That's a movie. You know? I don't even know what the fuck the name of that movie was. I forget it. I remembered it, then I forgot, and I'm not going to look it back up because I just don't want to remember.
It makes my heart hurt thinking about that night. But we got to get Tim on one day. Tim and Coral.
Oh, one of these days, this fucking guy don't know it, but he's already on. I want to get him to Philly.
Oh, he go to Mink. He'd be like, oh, I'm going there already.
Him and fucking Coral will go to Philly.
Coral won't want to go, but he'll go.
You know, I got to go to work, but, you know, fuck it.
Fuck it.
I'll go if Stevie will work for me. See, I'm going already.
Ah, shit.
I can't work for you. I'm going. But, yeah. I think Uncle Stevie would even like the fucking remakes, man.
Stevie would like the remake. Stevie does like the second one, maybe. I've watched it with him a couple times. He said that one of them are better than the original, and I was mad at him. Me and him got this whole big argument.
What, the original, the OG or the remake?
OG, both of them. He thought the remakes were better. I was like, come on, man.
I can understand, like, you got, like, for somebody who's not an aficionado, whatever the fuck the word is.
Aficionado, yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I can see that, of course. Definitely. That's like the same thing like with a remake video game. Like, you know, if I introduce my son to Spyro now, he ain't gonna like the old one. You know what I mean?
No. You know, I was just playing fucking, what was it, Tecmo on Nintendo? I'm not playing that over, Matt.
But you appreciate how they were able to make the game.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing with it. But don't get me wrong. I do get in my moods where I will want an old school, like a Friday the 13th, one of the newer ones or something. I get in those moods where I may want to watch this every now and then. But, yeah, if I'm going to sit down and watch a movie, especially with people, remakes. And it's cool that they can do that, because I wouldn't really do that with the new Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
The director is a piece of shit.
The only ones that I can do that with is the Halloween, because, you know, Rob Zombie.
We're going to fucking do it one day.
Rob Zombie, baby.
I was talking to Dismay about it. I was like, he's going to hold his ground. Like you've never seen before.
Man, we'll talk about it when it comes.
Okay, one day, you never know.
Fucking old Rob Zombie, baby.
Another thing, too. Both of these remakes had $15 million budgets. Yeah. I mean, you know, even back then they had $15 million. They couldn't do what they did in this, but they, I mean, come on.
It's comparing apples to oranges. It really is. But you got to understand, the remake wouldn't even have been without the original.
Exactly.
That's what I keep saying. Wes Craven set the fucking tone, man. He set the tone.
And what you mentioned that you may like the second, it's so confusing when you're talking about two movies, you know, the second movie, the original second, more. I think I may like the second remake more than the first one, even though these had a big drop off. You're talking worldwide sales of $70 million for the original, and then the second one, $37
million. Damn.
Big drop-off. Same budget. Big drop-off.
Damn.
In the U.S., it only made $20 million, so, goddamn. I don't know. I kind of like the second one. They were kind of both the same movie, though.
It was something about the second one. I don't know, man. For me, especially for the original, it was just the more of the aesthetics, I guess, that they were able to put into it. The motorcycles, the super fuel, the storyline. By that time, you knew who the Hills Have Eyes were. You were waiting for that story. It was just more established.
And I will say there are some franchises that just... Friday the 13th is a good example. First one was good. The second one was better. Granted, it had Jason. But it was more like they knew what they were trying to do. Kind of like what you just said. So it's more of a complete thought that you're getting. A lot of movies will shit the bed the second time around, but you know, yeah. I think Nightmare on Elm Street did that. I mean, Friday the 13th did that. Hills Have Eyes did that. Scream
didn't. I don't know, man. That. I liked the second one. I liked it.
Yeah, the second Scream.
I liked the second. Yeah,
I like it a lot.
Scream. I liked Scream too.
I don't know the original though.
The original one is what holds it's the Drew Barrymore, man. That's what it is. Yeah, it's the Drew Barrymore.
First one was a brutal. I could talk about Scream all day. It's just something about it.
It's the fucking Drew Barrymore, man. They introduced it so well.
Yeah, but Craven just has that stigma about him.
Man, he does. He set the tone right then and there for the OG part two. For a lot of things that were to come. Just how he has, you know, the idea of a bunch of friends sticking together. It was crazy. He was able to keep flipping and reinventing and flipping and reinventing. And even though the remakes might be more pleasing, now to sit down and watch, especially if you got people over, it came from that original idea. None of this would have fucking been around had he made those movies. The foundation came from that.
And I do think that in the remakes, the way these guys were completely disfigured, that's what they wanted, I think, in the first ones. But makeup and all that for however long they were, that gets expensive fast. And it's hard. It was hard to do back then also. So I think this one added elements that one was kind of wanting. And they were just able to do it in the time frame and the money they had. That's why I think I kind of dig it, because the colors and everything felt the same, which is good.
Yeah, they were more storyline heavy back then because it was new. you know, for back then in the 80s or, you know, the late 70s, the storyline is pretty frightening.
Yeah.
You get lost in a trapped area in the middle of the desert. People are watching and they're killing and, you know, so now that storyline has already been frightening. What do you do to remake it? The storyline's already been written. Everybody knows the storyline. Mm-hmm. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to introduce the cast of the hills, you know, the people in the hills, and we're going to have to make them more gory. We're going to have to, you know, up it in that sense. And that's where it gets its edge.
Yep. Yep. I don't know, man. I it's hard for me to, and I'm the one to hate on remakes, and so I really can't do it on these. Can't do it.
Nah, it's hard. You can't. You really can't. I liked them. I enjoyed them a lot.
Check it out. But I think we gave them The Hills Have Eyes like none other have.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're gonna get any better than that. Mm. Not even with Dismay on it.
Fuck Dismay. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but for real, Dismay, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do, Dismay? It was weird not having her around. It's kind of strange.
Not for me. I'm used to this shit.
Piss on his shoes.
You know what I'm saying? You fucking with you. You Dismay, what's your bet? You want us to do the fucking movie on ourselves? What you want us to do? Nah, but for real, I mean, on behalf of her, I would just like to say that Wes Craven... genius, especially in the horror genre.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Michael Berryman, for taking time out doing the interview with @SlasherRadio on Twitter. Definitely appreciate the time that he spent with us. And there's a lot more coming soon, so stay tuned.
Yeah, maybe even more Michael Berryman. We talked about that other movie, and maybe he'll hop on again. We got to talk to his people, talk to our people.
That's right.
Mink, where are they finding you on Twitter?
@BobbySpitzer with two R's.
Two R's.
Two R's.
And I'm @MikeysDad. Dismay's @Dismay00. That's Dismay Ballsack. And Dismay, like Bobby just said, the show's @SlasherRadio. Go to SlasherRadio.com. Keep your eyes out on Twitter for our next giveaway. And go to Shudder.com, /pod promo code. And good night from Slasher Radio.
Good night.
All the best with Slasher Radio Podcast.
You can bullshit my way out of a parking ticket, baby. Come on, now. Hey, yeah, I was only here for a fucking second. I had to take a piss. I got my son here to take a shit. Go in there, let him take a shit real quick. What are you gonna do? Put a boot in the car? Come on, now. Let me go.
Come on, leave me alone.
Come on, leave me alone. Your kid had to take a shit. What are you gonna do?
Can't
have to take a shit. Come on.
Come on, leave me alone.
You fucked up guy or something like that. He's 6 years old. He had a shit. What the fuck's the matter with you?
What the fuck?
Who's your boss?
let me talk to you about it.
Let me talk to your boss. The fucking guy put a boot in the car. You my fucking son. He had to take shit. He's 6 years old. What do you fucking want him to do? Want him to shit his pants? I mean, fuck. Come on, guys. Hey, well, that's right. You want to go? We fucking, you know what? You keep the fucking thing on there. Next time he's got to take shit, I'm going to fucking wipe it all over your car.
You happy now?
You happy now? In fact, he's got to take a piss right now. I think he's going to piss in his shoes.
Get it, son.
Hey, dude, pee on his shoes. That's what you get, you fucking piece of shit. That's what I thought. You take it off.
What the fuck is that?
Just saying, you know, you bullshit your way out of a parking ticket. You gotta do what you gotta do. You piss on your shoes, great. You gotta pee right now. What do you want me to fucking do? I can't go inside and take a piss. You gotta piss on your shoes. You telling me he can't go in there and take a piss? I mean, what do you want him to do? He ain't gonna piss his pants. I mean, fuck that. Come on now. Your shoes are his pants. It's my fucking kid. Would you do that? Yeah, come on. What if this was your kid? You gonna make him piss his pants too? Or some guy's shoes that you don't give a fuck about. Come on.
You piece of shit.
Hey, piece of shit. I know you don't give a fuck about me. I don't give a fuck about you, piece of shoes. You don't give a fuck about me, my kid. You don't give a fuck about you, piece of shoes. Fuck, you gotta take a piss. Obviously, you gotta fuck boot the cock. You gotta take a piss. You gotta piss your shoes. Hey, you done? Shake it when you're done. Let me know. That's what I thought. Take it off. Come on, tough guy. No, we're all trying to make a living. I know. Come on. But the kids gotta take a piss. Enough. You know, we're talking about the kids here. What do you want them to do?
It's the most ridiculous conversation.
It happens, though. What do you want him to shit on the fucking curb, show his ass to all the pedophiles? What do you want him to do?
You sick fuck.
What, you like that shit? You get off on that? You fucking put your balls on the phone. He's trying to look at my son's ass. This fucking guy over here. Fucking sick fuck told him to take a shit on the curb. Yeah, you did. You won't let him go in there and take a shit. You want to boot the fucking car because you want to look at his ass. Yeah, you did. He's telling me he's got a nice ass. I don't know what the fuck the problem guy is. That's what I thought. Take the fucking boot off. Yeah, but fuck you too, guy. Yeah, next time, man. Yeah, go fuck you. Yeah, next time. Yeah, fuck the Jets. Fuck the Jets too, you piece of shit.
The two poor Jets.
Fucking Jets. Jets fan, huh?
Piece of shit.
Last time you guys did nothing. Fuck, you can't take a shit, you fucking pedophile. What do you want to do? You want to grab his ass, too?
Grab his ass?
What the fuck is bad with you? What's going on over here? Hey, he wants to grab his ass. How the fuck you want to grab the kid's ass? He's a fucking sick fuck. Look at that sick fuck. He put a boot in the car? Yeah, because he wants to grab the kid's ass. My nephew? Yeah, he wants to grab your nephew's ass. Oh, get the fuck out of here.
You gotta be kidding me.
Put a boo in the car because the kid had to take a shit. That's what I'm saying. You want to look at his ass. I told him you want to shit in the curb so you can look at his ass. You fucking freak.
I just picture Sylvester Stallone.
You fucking freak. Look at that kid's asses and shit, dude. What the fuck you want me to do? You think anybody would just pull up here and park because a kid? You know, come on. I got fucking somebody. Maybe he's 6 years old. Gotta take a shit. What do you want him to do? What you try to say?
He's got piss on his shoes.
Piss on his shoes? You want to look at his little dick? I mean, what the fuck's the matter with you? What you trying to do here, buddy? What's the real deal? Huh? You tickle me, I'm all pee-wee Herbie. What's the fuck with that? A piece of shit. Hey, fucking guy, you go in there, go take Junior, let him take a shit. You fucking cut back, put a boot in the car because you want to look at his ass. My nephew, yes. Yeah, your nephew there. He was trying to go in there and take a shit. You saw. Yeah, he said he had to take a shit. I was in there with him. I had to take a piss. You guys were in there shitting. What the fuck happened? And come back out. This prick wants to talk about it. You put a boot in the car because he had to take a shit. You saw him. What the fuck? Why does he want to look at my ass, Dad? Because he's a sick fuck. That's why. Fucking sick fuck. You know what? Leave the fucking boot on there. I'll pay you, sick fuck. You want to be a sick fuck? I'll go ahead. Yeah, you leave the boot on there. Go ahead. Leave it on. You ain't going to see his ass, you little fucking sick ass. What's the name of your company, you sick fuck? So I can report you. I'll pay the ticket, but I'm going to let him know. I'll pay your fucking ticket because you want to see my son's ass. Hey. Ain't nobody going to see my kid's ass. I'll pay the price. Fucking sick bastard. No, don't take it off. Leave it the fuck on. Hold on. What are you doing? It's too late now for that. Now you want to take it off, huh? After what? You try to see his fucking ass out, taking the shit on the fucking sidewalk, huh?
After what?
I mean, you might as well leave it on now, you sick fuck. Now I know who. No. Leave it on. Call your boss. I tell him why I'm paying your fucking ticket. I'll pay your ticket and I'll tell him why. Because you're a fucking pervert, that's why. You piece of shit.
the poor guy sits. I can just picture the no, wait.
No, I'm gonna take it. No. Leave it on. I'm gonna pay it. I'm gonna call your boss and tell him why. I'm gonna tell him why I'm fucking paying it. I don't give a fuck. You think I pull up here just for any fucking reason? I say, hey, take a shit. You think it's a fucking joke, huh? You think it's funny? You fucking kid, 6 years old, you better shit his pants, huh? You find humor in that? You fucking sick bastard.
I spent money on those pigs.
Spent money? You find humor in this? You think it's funny? Hey, you want to see him take a shit on the sidewalk, huh? You fucking want to see his ass or something? I'll show you an ass. I'll show you your ass. Put your fucking pants down, take them off, and put them in the back of my car and drive home.
Boot door.
You fucking... No. Leave it on. I'm going to call your boss and tell him why I fucking pay you. I tell him why. Tell him why, because you're a fucking pervert. That's why. Fucking kid, take a shit. God forbid. God forbid, right? You think I park like this anyway, huh? Fucking kid, take a shit. God forbid. Fucking kid. You ain't gotta hold it. You gotta piss on the shoes. The kid's gotta take a piss now, eh? Look at that. Yeah, and his laces, Junior. Look at that. What do you think about that? You thought I was fucking playing? He's got potty bag. You got potty problems. What the fuck you want? Piece of shit. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, you take the fucking boot off, you. Piece of shit. You try the next guy, you scumbag. You scumbag. I tell you what, next time you put a boot on my car, I better not catch you fucking looking at my son the way you did. Huh? You think I pull up like this any old fucking day? You fucking head take a shit. You fucking jack off.
Call him a scum.
You fucking jack off. Get in the car. Son of a bitch. Who the fuck do you work for anyway? I'm just saying, I ain't never heard of that company before anyway. You got ID on your pal? Come on, eh? You trying to make a big fucking deal, but you over here trying to look at my son's ass and shit. I might call the fucking cops. Nah, what the fuck? Then what are you going to do? You got two choices. Are you going to take the fucking thing off or we're going to have a problem? You don't look like you're too good at math and solving things, so you tell me. What are the fucking two? Oh, you know how to put it on, you can take it off, eh? Little piece of shit, get in the car. That's enough for you, you little fuck. You get in the car. Yeah, I know you say piss on shoes, but don't worry about it. Get in the fucking car. Well, you gotta pee now? Well, you gotta pee? Well, fuck it. The boot's on anyway. Piss on the shoes. Fucking piss on the shoes. I don't give a fuck what you do. Matter of fact, don't piss on the shoes. Go piss in the fucking car. Open up the door and go piss in there. Yeah, you're pissing this fucking car. How about that? You fucking piece of shit.
Oh, my God. Dude, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, I think.
Fucking Maron, man. Hey.
Oh. All right, you want to wrap this thing up?
I mean, it's up to you. What do you want to do? Fucking sit here, wrap it up, or you want to fucking take the thing off the car? I mean, it's not even like I'm in really infraction or nothing. I mean, it's just fucking 2 inches off the curb. Come on, man.
He's taking the shit.
You think I fucking park like this? I mean, come on. Lay here all my life, motherfucker. It's my neighborhood. Do you think I park like this? Fucking owner of the store come out. What's going on over here? The fucking guy, he wants to see my son's ass. Oh, fuck. What the world? Motherfuck. Rock. Come on, Rock. Your son's ass. My son's ass. He's trying to fucking look at his ass. Fucking guy, man. Rock. Why does he gotta do that for? He's a fucking piece of shit. That's why. I mean, fucking why? God makes him like that. I don't know. He's saying he was just in here taking a shit. I know. That's what I'm telling the fucking piece of shit. The junior was taking a shit. That's what I said to him.
Even called the
ball. Guy's like, all right, I take, no, fucking leave it on.
I kind of like
that. They always do that. Every once you get your way, no, leave it on now. No, it's too late now. You should fucking leave it on. I'll call your boss and tell him why the fuck you didn't. You did it, what you did. Don't you gonna get out of here, huh? Fucking kid in here taking a shit. No, Rock, let him take it off. He's trying to be good. Nah, the fucking guy's a scumbag, piece of shit, pedophile, looking at my son's ass. Don't say that, Rock. You looking at his ass, why the fuck are you kidding? Take a shit, put a boot in the car. What do you want me to do? Come on, take the boot off his car. Come on, I'm trying to. Nah, you know, fuck this guy. Tell him, nah, Rock, let him take it off, Rock. Let him take it off. I tell him, let him take it in front of my store. Let him take it. Take it off. He can't come here. He take a shit. He can't help it. What do you want him to do? That's the famous one. What do you want to do? That's what the boys. That's when you know it's done. What do you want to do? It's done. What do you do? I want to take the fucking boot off the car. Tell him, take him. What do you want to do? I want to take the boot off the car. Come on, guys. Why are we fighting here? What do you want to do? Take the boot off the car.
That's what all the fucking boots on the table.
After that, all three of my best fucking friends.
Yeah, yeah. That's how it happens, me.
After that, all three of my best fucking friends. 2 months later, call him up. Man, I see this guy parked in front of my house. He can't fucking need you. Put a you fucking guy. He's in front of my. Put a boot on his fucking car. In front of your house? Yeah, in front of my. I'm on the way.
20 years later, that you know, I still got that boot in my garage.
You know, I still put that boot on that guy's car in front of your house. But you was trying to look at my son's ass that day. Oh, I wasn't looking at his ass. Was I looking at your ass? By then, you're like fucking 23. I don't know what the fuck he was doing. Why?
You were looking at my ass?
For some reason, he's your uncle. You don't know why now. He's just your uncle.
He's like, the Momo.
He's fucking Momo. I don't know. Were you looking at my ass? I don't know what the fucking whole story is. He don't remember. He don't remember. Fucking.
Thank God.
Thank God. You know, geez. He still got that boot, though, huh? He still got that boot. That's how it starts. All three of them best friends. What do you want to do? What do you want to do? What do you want to do? I would take the fucking boot off the car.
That's how adults made friends back in the day.
Yep.
That's how our parents made friends.
What do you want to do? That's the famous fucking. That's the famous words right there. That's when it's done. It's over.
That's when all the meat's on the table. Like, that's when somebody realized we went as far as we could go. What do you want to do? What are we doing now?
You're not budging. He's not budging. I'm not budging. Nobody. What do you want to do? What do you want to do? You realize this became ludicrous. It's out of hand.
We're going in circles at this point.
What do you want to do? What do you want to do?
How we end?
That's it. Come on. What do you want to do?
Now you tried to take the boot off. You want to what do you want to do?
At this point in time, you got a point decision to be made at this point in time. Either you're gonna be an asshole, or you fucking reconcile everything. And then, right? You got a choice between the three of you. But what do you want to do? It's the question. You know what you want to do. You know what you have to do. But what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Are you going to let the pride get in the way? What are you going to do?
Everybody wins. Everybody can win here. You know how everybody can win.
What are you going to do?
And that's when you'd be like, hey, whatever he wants to do. I don't care. I don't care no more.
Even though I'm taking off out.
I don't give a fuck. Whatever he wants to do. I don't know. I'm done. I did everything I could do.
Like, I want to take it off. Take it off.
He says he's done. I'm done. I don't give a fuck. All right. We're done. It's done. All right. What do you want to do? We're done. Whatever he wants to do. Then the guy who wanted whatever he wanted to get done wants whatever the guy he wanted to get done was done. Then it's all done. It's over.
Leave what it on. You, I know. It's your job. I know.
Do you want to do? You know how it is. I know.
Did the boot ever come on or stay off? What happened?
The boot came off.
The boot came off.
Boot came off.
Praise Jesus.
Boot came whenever off. He needed that boot off, whenever he needed that boot back on somebody else, though.
it was
unsigned. He knew who to. He knew how to call. That was it. One call away. This fucking guy, you need to put a boot on this car. That was it. That's all it took. What do you want to do? Uncle Stevie asks that every now and then, too. He'll ask it.
Oh, yeah.
What do you want to do?
Yeah. Yeah. He'll default to that. He'll tap out to it every now and then.
What do you want to do? You ready for this one?
I'm ready, big. He's a coxswain standing in the stall. See this?
Fucking the whole thing. Don't tell him it's about my cock.
Oh, you don't want him to know? Oh,
no, because if he does, he ain't gonna. He's not gonna want to go.
He's gonna think it's all about him pulling out on him in Philly.
Just you know, exactly. Right, exactly.
I didn't think of that.
No, don't tell him. He's gonna think it's a big fucking cock joke to go to Philly and pull my dick out on him.
He thinks you're gonna get to the top of the steps and pull it out on him.
Just tell him we want to go to Geno's and fucking, you know, fun.
You know he's gonna be like, fuck you going to Philly for?
Well, he's gonna know something's wrong because I'm going.
Yeah. That's the problem. That right there. That's probably. No, something's telling me no.
What, the two reviews?
And Feta, oh no.
Why is he? You know, that's fine, you, but why is he gotta go?
Why is he coming?
No, Jimmy, I don't know, baby. I gotta work. I gotta fucking. Oh, come on, it'd be fun. We'll book it around a weekend. You don't got no excuse. Come on, Saturday, Sunday.
Then we told him he won't have to kick in for the room he might
fucking go. Philly's 100 miles from you guys anyway.
It's not. It's a ride, but it's not the end of the world.
It's not, man. No, it's like no. The same distance from when I was in Columbus to Atlanta.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world. Like, you can get there and back in a day.
He's going to lay a lot of farts in the car, though.
He is, but come on. There's no excuse. Especially after a cheesesteak. Come on now. I know. You know what the fucking... I don't know, Jimmy. Why... I don't know. The why fuck Philly? You two got going on? We're Philadelphia. You do all this shit here.
Go to AC, Jimmy.
Better cheesesteaks in fucking New York.
The pizza, cock.
Any day. Fucking Philly cheese... Yeah, they make it, but it's better here, Jimmy. It's better here. I remember that one day he was like, no, I know you lived a lot of places, but... Just fucking here in the rest of the world. My Uncle Stevie, you don't understand. Like, I mean, you know, it's fucking New York. You've never been here before. So you're going to go down there for cheesesteaks. It's going to be tough to sell because you don't make them better in New York. Yeah. It don't fucking matter. It don't matter.
Jimmy? I should mention it now. Just, you know, brief, you know, thinking about going to Philly. Plant that seed.
Yeah. We'll go to Philly, have fun, just because. We'll go to Geno's. We're going to tell them we're going to do a review of Geno's Philly cheese.
Okay.
We'll want to go down there so that we can do a review on Philly cheesesteaks at Geno's.
Maybe we'll just lie to him and we'll tell him we have a big interview and then just tell him it fell through.
Whatever the fuck it was. Yeah. You know, we got to interview with whoever the fuck. Fucking Meek Mill.
And it fell through. Right when we get there. Halfway there. Maybe we could just tell him. Uncle Stevie, we don't got an interview.
Better yet, you don't even got to tell him I'm coming. Just get him there.
Oh, God, that'll be bad. Oh, I'm going home, cock.
Oh, no.
Last time you two were together, I lost an antenna.
No. Something's up.
Going home, cock.
He looks different. I know he's up to something.
Why you look so good, cock?
Why you look like that? Why you look like... You guys are up to something. There's something wrong with you.
You lift your arms to hug him and you see that your bush. What you got a bush for?
He looks fucking. Why does it look like that?
That hair, you got a bush.
I'm gonna fucking bush. I'm gonna fucking cut your hair. I'm going home, Jimmy.
Where'd you get that bracelet from?
The fuck are you doing walking around with no shirt on?
Imagine if he, like, it clicks, like, just your image clicks to Sylvester Stallone somehow.
I remember you fucking cocks talking about his fucking porno.
You sent me the, oh no.
Feta one, though.
Yeah.
It's okay to tell him. He would know. He
would help us. Reel him in.
He would. Yeah.
Because you got to think, every weekday, he's there. Come on, Stevie. Come on, you cockle.
We're going to Philly with the kids. Come on, why not? Come on.
I don't know, Philly.
Why not? Fucking. What was the last time you got them two together? Come on, they wanted to hang out. It's been a long time. Yeah, but fucking, it ain't been too long.
I can't get home. I can't leave before I'm
filming. Yeah, okay, I gotta go to fucking work. Fucking Philly. I don't know. They make fucking better cheesesteaks here anyway. No, they don't. Yeah, they do. They fucking.
Over here.
Over here in fucking. Up there in fucking Queens. Fucking right around the corner. Where I work. Yeah, Jimmy. Fucking Subway. My new Philly cheesesteaks.
Nice, Jimmy. Nice.